That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fascinating.
I think we're going to get started. Thank you all so much for being here and for rescheduling the location at the last minute. And thank you, Sarah, for offering us this apartment so we didn't have to make people stand in the cold. And I mean, the park is flooded at this point. So so welcome to Green Space. Many of you know what we're about. But I'll give a sort of introduction to the idea of this series. And then introduce our three incredible readers. So Green Space is a micro reading series that normally takes place in public space. It started with a group of friends hanging out during the COVID lockdown in Chapin Parkway in lawn chairs, even when it was in the 40s, even when there was snow on the ground. And the series continues normally as a small claim to that public space and an open-ended experiment in citing performance outside. Except for when there's lightning, because we don't want to kill our readers, or our guests, or ourselves. But so that's the idea of Green Space, and we have we always go out afterwards, and so you know, to continue the conversation, and so there is an event that a lot of us will be heading to after this. Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think after brief refuel, some of us might just grab some food on the way. There is a show at Chemical Plant Number 2, I believe it's called, on Connecticut Avenue, if you give me a few seconds to pull up the address. But there will be four bands playing, some of our friends and my partner will be there, and that'll be running till like 10 or 11. So we're going to head over there shortly after this. It starts officially at like 7:30.
Okay.
But it goes till like 11 or something because it's four bands. And a fun fact, I did once get pushed into the wall at this venue and left a screw-shaped hole repaired.
Nice.
Yeah.
So chemical.
Chemical number two,
chemical
or chemical
number
plant
two.
Number two.
Chemical number two on Connecticut.
Oh, is that like a Sonic the Hedgehog level?
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, it might be. I
just
know.
Occurred to me.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, watch out for the loop-de-loops. So our three readers are Laura Jaramillo, Sarah Scrow, and Marty Kane, and I'll introduce Laura. Laura Jaramillo is a poet and critic born to Colombian parents in Queens, New York. She now lives in Durham, North Carolina. Her books include Material Girl, Subpress 2012, and Making Water, Future Poem 2022. She holds a PhD in critical theory from Duke University and co-runs the North Carolina-based reading series and performance series, Paradiso. She's running a workshop at Squeaky Wheel, Visual Media for Poets, on Wednesday, April 5th, from 6 to 8 p.m., so I encourage you to check that out. It's free, or suggest donations. My engagement with Jaramillo's work is really new, but from reading them, you know, online, you know, I'm just really excited to continue that through her book, Making Water, of which there are copies here for you to get if you want one. Though the poems are new to me and my thoughts are provisional, let me give it a rough draft shot. To me, some of the poems have seemed like electrical storms glittering with charges spraying through their nodes. Or is it they have a surgical sense of the image, presenting moments in language pulsating with life, whose edges have been scalpeled away, then arranged in an impossibly precise geometry, the vibrancies of life and what tightly circumscribed its conditions made apparent? Or is it a kind of x-ray vision where skin and bone, material and ideological, are presented as simultaneous transparencies through deft pivots of language? Either way, the work has totally captivated my attention, and I can't wait to actually be able to write a better introduction once I read the book all the way through. But I'm so excited that Laura is here and is joining our community in Buffalo. So please give us a warm welcome.
Hey y'all, thank you so much to Joe for organizing, and thank you to Sarah for hosting, and Marty and Sarah for reading. I'm really excited to read in Buffalo. It's a town that I have a lot of affection for, but I didn't necessarily know like the poets here, and so I told Joe, I want to know what the poets are up to in Buffalo, so that's what brings me here, amongst other things. But I'm just gonna read from my book. my book is called Making Water. And the first poem is called Quarry. There's a will to drown consumer electronics that's distinct from revolution. Local kids smoke spliffs and cliff jump the quarry. To have perhaps re-encountered yourself in anger, natural as infancy in water. It doesn't smell, so somehow circulates quietly through generosity and impermanence, against the law, which is summer. There really is no discernible bottom. They describe people they desired as present or so present. Edged by jagged rocks and slime, the middle is sun traversing evening water. A pat description of beauty is that which cannot last. This empire's lumber is sadness, saplings and weed. Afternoon's boredom, bodily anarchy. The Eno winds through landlocked towns to loop around the empire of mosquitoes. And this book is set, a lot of it is, it's set in a lot of places, but the kind of place it's most set is in Durham, North Carolina, and there's a river in Durham called the Eno River. And this is, so it's, the water is, some of the water in the poem is the water of the Eno. Hang a right at Sitko. To say she's present really means everyone else is just not really there. The theraminic cry of girls before they hit the water. Grind with their granite lichens to sand. Light scatters through the canopy as a disco ball throws light. Lost for a time in the abstract forest of your name. Leave me now in the head holler. They ask us for herb, we ask them questions. One keeps talking, so continually reveals himself as not from here, maybe a leafier suburb. Manic talk with droplets running down your torso is the tell. Trailers now neater and quieter than the opening through trees. Some spilt diamond substance blinks and chatters above. Skinny and taut, bronze and brown, ringlets heavy with lake, one narrates the spiritual properties of meth. Profane words brush the thinkable. Communion quick becomes some other rite with bodies rent. Water flips the sky's axis, the wild stars of diving and no sound. Two of them were fucking in the lake and I thought it wasn't real because you couldn't spangle your body in this mud with mine. To live utterly in the airy realm of things and see with borrowed eyes. I've never liked anything more than time. The rites of spring in the strip mall parking lot. What flesh can do in masses with the violet day through the slats. A tendency to float derealized above the afternoon. Bodies on the gravel. People ask if in America we eat only hamburgers. Dust that traverses the sun's rays down to its depth. Worn rope swing hung from ever younger quaking aspens. She swings off in defiance. The boys applaud a latent desire to be the lone woman among men, dimly recognized in the heavy heat, undivided, the one of us who won, not split. Everything I know is fragments, swimming off into the private world of women. And I also wanted to give a shout out to Carla Hung, who's a special visitor to Buffalo right now. And because she's my good friend, but also because she's someone who was there for the long drafting of this manuscript and who I feel, and someone who I feel that this writing is very much in community and in conversation with. And it's because of her tremendous solidarity and generosity that that is the case. This poem is called Lacrimosa, and it's set in Queens. Lacrimosa. East Coast rentals carry those Florida plates bearing orange blossoms, vermilion and white abundant promise in the land of eternal night. Old immigrants buoyed on prosperity of car dealerships, prosperity of delis, prosperity of dry cleaners. Cities of the East mortgage to meanness and ice, a whole life and its ways expires without witness. To make it to Nassau from East New York blackout in 77, during the riots they were stealing tables, making worlds, and he, defining what Puerto Rican Sicilian brown skin wasn't in the dark, said, how we, the whites, train our dogs. Slowly, Spanish is extinguished from their feelings. Ice cream pints stowed in Chevy's trunk, wrapped in blankets, selling to bodegas in the boroughs, driven against potholes and chemical gales, blown off Newtown Creek, managing a strip club at the edge of Corona. Little plaster angel hung on the door, casts his eyes down at us, the way the shag carpet devours light and sound, bore the surname Romano, sun-baked commoner in the empire's southern leg, bore this ordinariness not as the soul of dispossession, but as the root of the normal. Abandoned rap CD bakes out in cash-bleached suburban sunshine, white is right to brittle coarsening. The double face of Gemini spits in the eye of sadness, then folds in on itself, never to be known. But we admired Hendrix's moves like a flaming oil slick on the sea, his light sliding and sparking against electric frame. Anointed king of the clan by the sweat of his brow, sit out on a folding chair getting umber in the sun, the same classic rock that was never classic with the subwoofers on. Why won't you come to him with your problems? By now, the whole coast tangle of glittering traffic mortgaged time to nothingness. When you became an invalid, you saw for the first time the world reflected in the dog's lachrymose eye. We look out the Amtrak window over the dun-colored lake to see it perfectly mirror the dun-colored sky. Carolina mold nestled quietly in the folds of our garments. And a swarming kinetic force goes out of this world. Because my feelings are a harp of ether, I came home to rest the day he resigned. Flesh is against us. He replaced the shape of his form in the universe with the word Christmas. I kept thinking time is reversible. She said they'd lay down new carpet only in the spot where it happened. Telluric cycles of feasts say time is renewed. Flesh is renewed, he is risen again, but this isn't it, the skull's architecture blown over blankets in precise fragments. No love for the broken body in the cult of man, which would fit together as a jigsaw in some time-killing object. What did that mean? When is the time to die? In the arms of my imagination, a pietà, where I talked to him, feet wrapped in clean gauze, carefully wound by the hands of women. We washed each, inheriting accidentally another world in that process where men's hearts wither leprously. If we lacked them, we were born already our own fathers. If the matter of the broken body persisted in the oyster-colored light, it was because he had risen and was laughing, wearing sunglasses, insisting like a bandaged zombie Lazarus. It was a joke. Do the women dress you now in purple raiments and greet you at the threshold in the morning, washing your feet? They tell you to go down into that deep witnessing, and the whole edifice, incoherence of self, splays out and resists. I'll tell you morning is nothing and boredom. By January, I had become the soul of New Year, connecting vomit and tinsel through negative space. Just that, nothing, clapperless lead bell affixed to the lung. Time reveals its true face in ambient footfall of dogs howling across the neighborhood, away from idea towards song. No one wants to be nothing, and no one wants to be nowhere, and yet we are dislocations incidentally cut with experience. Gliding empty on and off exit ramps, almost in the middle of my life, still a student with no more than a dollar in my pocket, I've refused so much for sunny investments in beauty or memory. And then I'm gonna read one more poem from this book, which is called Handedness. Rubber bullets rebounding off the backs of passengers at Atocha. Which nation really loves work? He climbed a pole rigged with cameras in Bahrain wearing a balaclava. Tectonic seizure, continuous cuts, a committed poetry. He swung that hammer. No, which nation really loves work? Lost for a time in the abstract country of your name. Leave me now in the head house. Just call me the LOL assassin or forget to. Austerity is a metal spike to adorn our vague tongue with acid dislocating speech. English, the language of knives and incorporations, the language of instruments. Always to work. I am a hammer broken against work. Work and fortune are two symmetrical dreams, taught after becoming teachers to think our obsolescence. Hey you, clear-headed, not head full of clouds, watch cumuli sweep the future, not here. All of nature changing outside the window, a clear sense of office, destruction. The university a gray dream, retreating on an infinite plane. Voices losing their meat, discussing the body as an already dead thing. The presumed living operate imaginary hammers, and everyone's phone continually drops into jeweled sucking mud. Walking out into the street, an end. To imagine or practice a new way of sensing, I believe this, how language folding the color carnelian into music invented curiosity, how everything in its vibrancy is bound and bucks meaning, the world's intelligence in excess of the instruments. Sovereignty climbs up my throat and I expel it from my body again, all its forms, the victim, the bohemian, the child, the dog, the owner, the tutor, the citizen, the anarchist, the poet, a simple quaking disgust ribbed by control, the diaphragm spasms. So many times collapsing under its weight, taking responsibility for my own self when I have never been one, nor is thought one, but the world's discordant chorus showing how meaning is garlanded and undulates round being, if you want it. You make me laugh, I drift to sleep. You say phrases, I mimic your gestures, which become the fabric of me. Dusk draw fiery orbs on the wall, and play is the memory of freedom. Thanks so much.
Cool. We'll get back to it. We have two more readers. I'll start with my kind of scattered thoughts introduction and then go into the more kind of polished official bio for Sarah. So, okay. I'm sitting on the hexagonal tile floor in the bathroom waiting while my four-year-old shits. And I'm reading Sarah Scrow. Body and waste and excess and desire and fluids and filth, it's all charged with stench and tactility, a sensory overload, a poetics of bodily waste, a desirous and repulsive bodily waste. Sarah writes, every filth is resurrected. Is this a celebration of the sacred or profane? Is this resurrection complete and contained or excessive, sloppy, and messy like everything else in the sprawling hellscape? It's all touching and blurring and splitting, but entangled and present. Poems that sit on our tongues and fingertips. The everyday, the mundane, and also the ever-exceptional experience of the body as an interface of erotics. Sarah Scrow is a PhD candidate in English at the University of Buffalo, where she studies digital waste, and co-leads the Paula Light Lab, a creative and critical community for queer feminist new media. She is the author of the full-length poetry collection, If the Future is a Fetish, Yes, Yes Books, 2019, and received her MFA of the University of Mississippi, work appears in both Offing and other publications. Please welcome Sarah Scrow.
Thank you so much. So when Marty asked me to read, I sort of replied honestly that I have not been writing a lot of poetry lately because I have been working on my dissertation and I've been a tutor and have been working on a fiction project sort of very slowly. And I'm sort of diving back into it after some time off. So I will be opening with a poem tonight that I wrote a while ago. And then I'll be reading a little bit of that fiction. And I chose this poem tonight because it does talk about
green space a little bit. And the poem is sort of about the setting of my recurring dreams slash nightmares, which is the sort of dying but also like enduringly enticing landscape of the American Mall. It's called Our Dreams Are Muscular. Remembering a mouth, but where is the silver pill? The right to be forgotten or to multiply, the metal emptiness. But is it vacancy or greenery, the room, a decorate into a chaste hotel with nothing of my own? I can't walk by my vulgar dailiness like that. A soggy book, I stuff a photograph into the dresser filled with rats who dream prophetically of failing malls. I palm her mouth in sleep, where she is always running or unwrapping smelly breakfast sandwiches beside her father on the train. It's common to resist the sputter of a punctual machine, the body bending back in space, the densely punctuated grid. It begs for ownership. Our dreams are muscular with traps between the shoulder blades, belonging to myself, or to the rats when we are circling the food court floor with steak sauce on our jeans. I must have drooled for places once. Don't talk to me about the mouth. His spit pooled on the floor until the room decayed. I know the tritest thing about a pile is the metaphor of memory, the right to dim a glowing sign. The mall was built to buckle like a silver shoe flattened under metal cars. I admit I loved the fragrant stores, bleeding, flank on sandwiches, how nothing here belongs to me. But when the train arrives on time to break the glass, there's breakfast everywhere, there's father everywhere, the lights will dim, so I will finally go home to celebrate the failure of my grasp. An empty room can be so green, a grid without a single bleeding mouth. It isn't mine, the memory, the dailiness, the dreaming girl, the trap. And so definitely, you know, sort of grief and is a thread that also sort of trails throughout that poem, and that has sort of been unavoidably in my work for the past few years, and certainly in my fiction as well. So I guess I'll just give sort of a super brief background that's relevant to what I'll be reading. Again, this is a very sort of new project, but the book basically sort of follows three different characters and perspectives through their kind of increasingly surreal and overlapping attachment styles and relationships, and also kind of problematizing that term and kind of popular takes on it, and their attachments or fixations to specific digital spaces. And so I'm going to be reading two little excerpts from two of the characters. The first is Yona, and also if you know me, like this is obviously very, you know, semi-autobiographical. And Yona is sort of addicted to revisiting the landscape of her dead father's Facebook page. So, you know, digital waste certainly. And her partner, Tess, she is addicted to, if you've ever seen those sort of like really dumb and useless Facebook how-to videos, they're like a lot lamer and like less useful than Reels. It's like how to like make tile out of Ritz crackers, or like make a pot at, by like dipping like watermelon in cement or something. she is like a geology student, so she's studying right now GIS, which is it's a geographic information system. So it's sort of like a way of kind of coding geology. And so there's a lot of sort of geological and landscape language in the book, but she sort of seeks out this really kind of useless media as like refuge from the sort of like exactitude of her work. Okay, so the first little bit that I'll read is from Yona. When I hear the word lab, I think of how the rats must feel. Those fluorescent tubes of light are so unflattering, which makes the stimuli seem more alluring and their addictions more demeaning. A bell, a maze, a nub of cheese.
whatever makes the room a little warmer. When I die, if I'm dying on a bed, I want the room to be lit artfully. A $30 candle on the nightstand, an Edison bulb strung up overhead. I refuse to stare at puckered ceiling tiles filtered through bright white. If I die suddenly while driving, I want the sky to be pitch black. Tess's GIS lab is just a room filled with computers. There's a 4-digit entrance code, and seeing Tess tap it out turns me on, though the room hardly feels exclusive. There's virtually no decor, not even maps, unless you count the absolutely no food or drinks print out by the trash can crammed with protein bar sleeves. I set my thermos, halfway full of Chardonnay, beside the mouse like an iconoclast. The light is awful in a stranger way than I'd imagined. Chauffeur beams bouncing off the glow of desktop screens, making me forget that I'm a body capable of sleep. It's 8 p.m. and Tess is working on a mid-semester project mapping grain silos in her hometown. Her professor said its scope was quite small scale, at least compared to other students charting air pollution patterns on the West Coast or coffee shops with unions in the mid-Atlantic. I thought it was poetic, though I couldn't say if the poem's engine would be narrative or lyric. I would have to see the map. On Tess's screen, neon dots freckle swaths of orange land, resaturating the lab. I watch her shuffle through a stack of blurry tabs, then start to surf my own topographies. A story draft, a boutique loungewear website organized by prices low to high, my dad. There's no other reason to log into Facebook anymore. My friend requests bloat with spam accounts and gray-streaked men with ugly right-to-live graphics as their banners. My timeline is a graveyard for accomplishments belonging to a former self, plateauing and then stalling out. If I pry into deeper strata, the forbidden layer filled with pictures of my dad trapped inside a batting cage and condolences from strangers tagging every member of my family. The way he occupies the sheet of timeline ties his loss too much to me, my mourning. It makes the split between my past and current self so palpable in all its quiet sadness and predictability. His own abandoned page is intricate, like all the maps above Tess's desk, or like the one she's building on her screen. I navigate the landscape on my lunch breaks, while I'm sitting in the car after work, while Tess is in the shower slicking wet paste through her curls. Now that Facebook has converted his account into a tribute page, his full name is preceded by the phrase remembering. I'm drawn to the directness of this prefix, how it forms a clear partition between who is dead and who is logging on to find them. When I enter my phone, an old post from Eileen Arnold Ross emerges as featured. Feels good to be back. Changed my maiden name and can't use old account. TYVM for accepting. NP, my mom replies. The timestamps are from too long ago to count anything but years. I changed Mark's account to remembering today. You're the last one to get in as a friend. We'll still be able to see or post on his page. Too real for me. Somehow, I believe an angel did that, answered Eileen, adding a pink heart hugged by a bow. And then this next excerpt is from Tess and sort of talking about a more concrete sort of geology. Yona takes me out for lunch at a diner built inside a freestanding train car. The goal is to replicate a railroad dining cart, but with omelets and club sandwiches instead of personal Sbarro pizzas and tuna salad kits. I like trains for how they let me occupy that space between sociality and anonymity, ritual and surprise. In college, I was assigned a 10-page ethnography for my cultural anthropology class. It was November break, and choosing the laziest and most last-minute option possible, I cast my problematic ethnographic gaze upon the setting of my Amtrak back to school. We learned Victor Turner's term liminal space that semester, and pulling bands of mozzarella off my cold slice, I used it generously. The train is a precarious realm betwixt and between, betwixt and between, betwixt and between. Betwixt Yona and I sits one tuna avocado melt on sourdough and one plate of poutine, which we shared between us. Sometimes I regret meeting Yona in such a precarious realm. There's so much about our relationship that I know I do want, just not now, or I want it now, but not too far beyond that. I regret the times I've ridden waves of tenderness and said things that suggest longevity. Where do you see yourself? She asks now, chewing a fry. Today, the future is relevant because of a GIS career fair that's happening on campus next week. There will be booths run by engineering consultant firms, wildlife refuge organizations, and startups promising to unlock the full potential of data, delivering time-sensitive agricultural insights and optimized outcomes. The positions, like the work they entail, form dots across a larger map, each one a plexus with its own version of a life. The August between my junior and senior year, I took a 2-week field trip to the plexus of the Ozark Mountains, where the structural formations are unique and difficult to study. The Ozarks form primarily from erosion rather than folding and faulting, and are originally made up of silt, sand, and marine animal remains. As these sedimentary deposits shifted over time with changes in environment and sea level, their layers hardened into sandstone, shale, chert, siltstone, and limestone. Eventually, tectonic uplift raised these strata, still intact, into a dome. Neighboring rivers and streams eroded these layers at varying rates, and bluffs, ridges, and hollows emerged. The Ozarks are technically not a mountain range at all, but a massive plateau shaped by water and time. We spent the first 3 days learning how to map space and its formations. Equipped with compasses and handheld GPS, we charted our location in coordinates and measured scales with survey instruments, calculating angles. Almost an entire day can be consumed by answering the questions, how tall, how far? My backpack also held a yellow field notebook and a bag of trail mix that I shared with Andy, who I met for the first time that summer. She bunked below me in the university-owned cabins a mile from the field site, which we left at 6 every morning with our faces still raw from yesterday's sun. Like Yona, Andy is effusive and flirtatious, skilled at charting angles in her interactions that make other people feel chosen, rare. We cuddled in my top bunk on the 5th night of camp after lights out, our other cabin mates respectfully asleep or feigning it. Our sleep shirts hung like lampshades as we touched noses, then felt the contours of each other's hips and ass. A minimalist kiss, rinsed of tongues. As we pulled away, I imagined this hackneyed but still erotic fantasy as part of Andy's trip itinerary, my crotch igniting spitefully and then with pleasing resignation. Andy would have stroked any girl she had been bunked with on the 5th night of field camp, and tonight I was that girl. My eyes were slow to adjust to the dark, and in the absence of Andy's face, I felt their features flee my grasp. Even with her nose and mouth as tactile clues, I was tired from a day of mapping new space. I let Andy's hands, less blistered than they should have been, lull me into inconspicuous submission. When we woke up in the morning in our own beds, I caught a glimpse of them reaching for a sip of water from a canteen on the floor, twisting the metal cap easily. They were so unbelievably unblemished after long hours working, taking on the day's first rudimentary task. I wanted to be twisted by them, then set back down. The food hall on our cabin ground served coffee, lukewarm eggs, boring table fruit, and pastries, which I learned would make the longest hours of the day feel even heavier. For lunch, we slid pre-wrapped sandwiches into our backpacks, purple jam and peanut butter, yellow cheese and marbled ham, everything too processed to get spoiled in the sun. We drank a lot of water, reminded others to drink more. Each excursion was a test of solidarity, a walking trust fall, as we held our rippled maps and tried to match them to the world we saw. Our field leader, Darren, used precarity as motivation. If you get lost, you get lost. And since I barely read the permission slips we signed, I wasn't sure if this was protocol or a performance. I love this basic tenet of geology. Everything begins laying flat, and then there's an event, an origin that creates a mountain, valley, or plateau. Movement, like stagnation, is an early principle. Time forces change. Maybe one day I'll examine urban soil geochemistry, studying the labyrinths of parks, or sunning on a rooftop farm. Even if I land behind a cubicle scrolling through environmental risk reports, that's a different shape from what I'm doing now. If I get lost, I'll get lost alone, and there won't be any ropes, there won't be any gifts, and if there are hands, I'll have no idea who they belong to.
All right, so let me introduce our final reader. Marty Kane is a poet originally from Vermont. He's the author, it's an official bio. He is the author of three books of poetry and hybrid writing, most recently, The Prelude. And Marty, this is the first reading on Marty's Prelude book tour here in Buffalo. So that's, yeah.
Woo!
His individual works have appeared in Best American Experimental Writing, 2020, Fence, Poetry Daily, Denver Quarterly, Sync Review, Mercury Furs, and elsewhere. He holds an MFA from the University of Mississippi and a PhD from Cornell University, where he wrote his dissertation on the rural poetic community. He's currently a postdoc within the Humanities Scholars Program at Cornell. He lives in Ithaca, New York, where he co-edits Garden Door Press and performs with Bog Mom, a poetry and sound collective. And I think there are Bog Mom cassettes. Here.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that's exciting. So Marty Kane saved my life, or my creative life. When I moved to Ithaca after getting my PhD, I was burnt out, unemployed, and far from friends. Marty pumped life and poetry back into me sideways by reaching out and literally putting a bass guitar into my hands to back his guitar and vocals for his surf punk band project, Joyous Shrub. He was friendly and the right kind of pushy. You know, like, we're doing this, he said, and we already were. And I just cannot overstate Marty's energy as a people organizer, a people electrifier, an editor, and a bookmaker who exudes genuine commitment and love for other people's work, which is a real gift in the poetry world. And as for The Prelude, which is out on Action Books, I do think it's a multifarious book, one worth really taking note of. There's chickens and serpents and eggs and shit and dad stuff and baby stuff. There are poems marked by a nested compositional rhythm of tenderness, the desire to nurture, and eruptions of violence, and at points, a spiral of decapitations. It's a collection haunted by the word enclosure, the transformation of ecologies into property, rifts and relations of extraction between town and country. And through that shit and muck, this all has an unromantic pungence, no nostalgia, just this stuff boiling in the chemistry of the soil. At the same time, the poems present a highly aestheticized / beautiful / strange moments that read as proleptic imaginations of the co-evolution of the technological, social, and ecological, filamented through each other in strange and necessary worlds. So that's The Prelude, and welcome Marty Kane.
Yo, what the fuck? Now I gotta read poems after that shit? I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you to Joe and to Jake, there you are, to Sarah for this last minute move, and just everybody for being here. I'm really, really stoked to be in Buffalo, the best city in New York State. Not that much of a contest. All right. So, let's see. Should make sure I got enough light here. Okay. This is The Prelude. I'm going to start with the dedication for May, my daughter, and the epigraphs. The Velvet Underground, who loves the sun? Loreen Niedecker, my prose and property both die out and leave me peace. Over time, I learned that the creek had an unconscious. In the summertime, covered in sweat, in the void of diversion, we spoke to each other. This is what it said to me. A fractal beholden, a plug of time, to rot or wander, to amble and wander, to stand at the crest of the schoolyard when the wind comes running, the milk soaks slowly into the white bread sandwich of youthful absence and comes at night like a red stream on the floor, still and drips through the cracks into the schnauzer in the apartment downstairs, one eye open, a vision creeps under the floor, forms on fire, leaking from each hole, rung from here to this coming Monday. Does the leather hold at the end of the form? Can it contain hay, or does straw lose meaning? It still arises in dreams of delinquent fields, of cattails slamming your body as you wander lonely, as a feather or corpse dog of longing when I remove the head. It sputters orange on the floor. You call the cops. I go to work. I look in the creek. I see my body. It's not my body. I stop mine time. I annotate mine eye. Every living thing replaces the absence of every other living thing. A garden littered with thousands of stomachs, the crows hovering and endlessly pecking. It is 3 o'clock. The luxury condos rupture the commons and stomachs pulsate. Oh, roll on over, the birds peck deeper, and inside one's stomach is sun circling the tube with a red ribbon, and I inject it. It swims in my rivers. My eyes open like tiny mouths, eating scenery and ferns sprout from ears and slash my throat, and a fungus grows from the cows, and both presence and absence are interminable fictions, yet power lives on within one body in the dark, and I gaze through the window and see myself slash my arm. The torrent of blood splatters the glass. My silvery tooth, my private self, the teeth were a symbol of capital gathered, and seeing myself feed himself and yourself, I meet his eyes. The chainsaw of sun, I meet my mouth with silver lips, prime the motor. How to feel alive without turning away. How to feel alive and love the sun without relinquishing the shadowy spots on the lawn and moving our chairs closer to the light like a cat napping its way down the hall every 20 minutes. As we sipped our juleps, we'd taken mushrooms in the morning. The wasp nests hum like lungs on the roof, and the sun was a prism, the wind and the violence. I know them well. I know the chainsaw is a seer. I know he was born in June and died in August. I know he has fruit and vegetable organs and inhabits a murk of fern seedlings and rare mineral patterns in a space I call the sub-garden, a meadow the menace has tried to poison. They lay down orange peels and pennies and try and catch it. They pour down Drano to try and kill it. A brief pause when the man comes into my home to unclog the system. He leaves grease stains on every imaginable surface. I study the trace. The smell of a corpse on the second floor or of alcohol eating the body within. I have never smelled death. When he left, I looked in the toilet bowl. I saw a ball of hair and fluorescent light. For a nest of lines, it makes a form. I pull them out one by one to rest on the human wall of ceramic tiles, a failing motion, an archival impulse. I grip the ball. It foams and it shrieks within my hands. One way to bite back. If system is organic, become alcohol and foment, death overwhelming the prosaic function of organs to rot out the beams which comprise the hotel, the infrastructure slowly eroding upon exposure to Drano. Notice, matter separates over time. A squirrel resides in exhaust pipe metal. I woke up thinking a vulture cloud, like opening credits, a knife, a bruise, a voice says, make babies, a prelude to waking up and smelling the rain with blue lightning in the forest around us to scrape dirt from my ornery chest, a cavity of silence, a small toothache of the heart or jaw or febrile jowl, sewing my eyes shut to think of summer like pork necks dreaming under plastic wrap. I can't get reception, the depression molded into edible noodles, or right in the winter living in the 3 foot radius of a space heater, the candle, a button undone, the sweating brow, a small animal living all over the skin, a beaver nest, a feeling to foment and explode across the cubicle nest, the cubist rainbow in the provincial country, the unfiltered form of the deer opened up, the ecstatic vein, the season of shaking yourself asleep. I woke up thinking, how much of this is time wasted? How much of this is time theft? How much of this is time theft? Is time wasted against time? And meanwhile, night crawlers wriggle on. Beneath the subgarden, a cosmic vein, a metallic fuselage from which mutilated weeds grow. I'm in the basement beneath the halogen bulb. I'm in the cellar, pulling the cord of the generator at a rhythmically acceptable rate, and when the room lights up, specters surround me and the walls bleed. A skeleton fluorescent a while runs from the sun into the back of my skull, and I develop antidotes to the desire to harm myself and others. Check this box, open this drawer, flick this switch, stretch the elastic around your ears so they distend like elephantitic winds of a grackled brain. The night crawlers continue a fruitless vision of ambiguous churning, subterranean labor, or whatever chronologically suspect movement enters and escapes the continually stewing realm of the body. This is occupied here, now. In the Nightcrawler's wriggle, a vision of a headless figure barking orders, and another person has disappeared in the embryonic night. The walls bleed, the veins emerge, they engorge and collapse, and the Nightcrawlers continue from the earth to the hand, to the beak, to the bowels, to the earth, to the hand, to the beak, to the lips. Rainwater pool, I don't want to kill myself under cloud cover. I pray to the sun. I pray to the body. I pray to the poem fated to murder the reader. I receive a missive via the mirror. The soap bar lifts on its own accord and writes its script. The coming day will be your last. There's a killer in this sentence, in this shack, in this mall, where we burrowed a home and bathed in the fountain, in this garden, in this codex, staying open. So, yeah, some light shit, right? Real happy. So as Joe mentioned, I'm on a tour right now, and I'm doing this thing that I'm gonna try and like write a bunch of stuff while I'm on tour, and like try and write a poem every day. I'm gonna read the one I wrote in a rest stop 60 miles outside of Buffalo today, day one, when I'm still, you know, exuberant, you know, young, fresh, whatever, showered. Yeah. Out past the West End and past the Gannick, and the wineries filled with Tacomas and New Yorkers, and the fun times mart smiling down at me, crossing myself as transmission struggles to swallow itself, cross the chain link fence and Romulus, limning the albino deer reserve, once a munitions factory, also a prison, also a former stop on the Underground Railroad, and I'm squinting, looking for albino deer, writing to drink from the fluorescent backyard pools connected to the lungs of the people I love. I write because I love, but I hate you. And I write for that increasingly as well. I hate you more than all the American flags in Waterloo, New York. I piss on the blue line that extends from your dog-like fragrant tongue. I continue to navigate past myself, the cows transubstantiating in sunlight, in the barnyard parlor caked with dung, where I write for myself and a few friends and change my sweaty, crusted sheets and never get famous or hungry. That was more dramatic than I had a panic attack. Fell asleep. Had a dream that the used bookstore was getting rid of the poetry section. I'm working there this summer, which is crazy. Had a dream the used bookstore was getting rid of the poetry section. They needed more shelf space, and poetry sucks, said the clerk at the front desk. Woke up, had another panic attack, smoked a joint, listened to the Prelude audiobook with the Scottish narrator, walked down to the creek, and words occupied my brain. Wordsworth. Or, haply, tired of this, to shut thine eyes, and by the internal light see trees and meadows, and thy native stream far distant. Fuck the free market. This one's from my friend Nick. I insert the neon card into the neon pinkish brain. I signal across the pit of time and translate the past like a torrential dust born from the Nintendo cartridge or the split open turkey neck or the exploded glass from the maw of the overturned police truck. A superhighway cacophony metropolis broke the night and the gourd open moose becomes a prismatic language through which light moves. I is dilation. I is turned inward internally through the seam of the skull. I pull the ripcord to the sun's other side to make a yolkier and I is an artificial lake, is a rivered unconscious constructed through detonation, a highway, a mess hall, or civilized ruby sliver, blood adorned and preserved in the sap to signal across and to dig hallowed violence out from the resin. A blistered surface? The eye, it's a pustule, a harvested poisonous berry from which the other drips and finds difficulty. And I is the dying brother in the ruby anarchistic surface and the creek mirroring the shape of the poem. I stick my feet in it, I stick my feet in it, I stick my feet in it and make a more skin-like language. And to me, that's an acre. That's a projection of space. That's a violent solidification of time in the crystallized life of rational movement. And now, the pendiculation. And now the orgiastic bluebird qualifier. And now incise the tips from my fingers. And now grow back the nails. And now ambivalent ambient space. And now inky interior birds. And now how my stomach was a mirror of the world. And now how my moss, it lived in my belly. And now how the frail meadow was non-existent. And now what was crazy they called symptomatic, and what was crazy lived in the subgarden. Now the subgarden was down below, and now the subgarden was neither mother nor monster. And now I adorn my skin with leathery moths. Marison. The preteen boy walks to the barn. It is night. It is raining. He opens the door. He opens the barn door and steps inside. He takes a red rag from a hook on the wall. He dries off his face. It leaves streaks of oil. He looks in the puddle. He sees his eyes. He climbs the rafters. He swings on the rope. He leaps into hay. He buries himself. He smells the dung. He smells the dung and pretends he lives in some kind of chrysalis with sun coursing through errant cracks, a shell slowly crackling as he moves his leg. A rat scurries by. Oh, he never experienced extreme darkness and only a purple thunder of one's squinted eyes drifting to sleep and thinking to a different way of viewing things. The sound of a truck motor humming and rooms melting into one another. He squints in this moment and dreams of dying. The hay starts to itch. He digs himself out, and strands cling to his jacket. The mare is asleep. He walks to the mare. The mare is sleeping with its eye half open, the bones locked in a standing position, which he knows is so she can run when threatened. He has been threatened in dreams and waking by boys who are larger, who brandish knives and have yellow nails pressed against him. He walks to the mare. He lies alongside her, caked in the mud. He closes his eyes. He imagines a pink thunder rising from his chest and reaching the horse. The time passes by and thunder spirals and becomes a ribbon and thickens to a cord. In his dream, the cord extends from his body to the horse and out of her mouth and into the rafters and into the sun. The cord is fluid and so is he. The horse she opens via a crease extending the length of her body, a pinata sawed open. He remembers the birthdays, the face in the pillow, the tears and saliva. He enters the mare. He lives in the mare. Her insides are purple. His eye is her eye. Their eyes are a marble with yellowy waves that go on like that. When he exhales, she gallops and they sleep that way. They live that way, lying down. They smell of manure, a pail of spilled milk, a trough of time. Their body ripples, their body flows down. They live in a garden underneath the garden and graze upside down and live upside down. You can get there only by turning away to see the motherfucking sun and peripheral flowers at the edge of vision. You get there only by turning away into the trough to dunk your head to see the light come in through the filter. Object airlock. Frantigraphic typographical device of no seatbelts, motherfucker, and cross the median or media membrane into the subgarden and tightening shell to ambulatory fragments of sundial sun refract and light through the windshield fracture which gives fast away to one boot plus lightning rails plus lightning rod plus lightning sun that the fucker has found somehow a way to monetize. The boy who entered the mare and didn't leave, he spent years inside there simply chewing the purple translucent walls and watching the sun come through in his eyes and think of the past, an escapist fantasy which lives in the fragment of dust crossing the light of the room in the future of time. When I open my mouth, the petals folded. There is no one in the subgarden but our variegated self. We found a way to behead our flowers, and we became elsewhere, in here, out there. Where can a body augment the miracle failures? A body we saw in the garden. You can get there only by tugging a network of roots so heads of leaders cleave off and vie in a recyclable plastic nets to decompose slow or else quick in a plastic raised composter with added moisture and slits and augmented red wigglers, the junk letters for better insurance with mailer windows and blood smeared on the throne. Removed in the name of microbial oxygen and spread what's left to consume years of manure. And property seized, can we get there only by turning away? All right, I'm just gonna read a couple more here. All right, this one is for my daughter, May. Romanticism is learning to see again. is learning to follow the fan again, is learning to shape one's lips into a grin again in response to external stimuli again, is coughing while ingesting a small amount of dust again, is looking in the mirror again and seeing yourself stare back in the mirror again, a spider hanging and opening its furry legs again, bisected by the window shutting, is pressing down on the eyelids again like a corpse or sleeping child again to see utter darkness or webs of red and purple lines again, as the case may be, is thoughts like clouds forming and deforming in your head again, is one strawberry hair longer than the other again, is an outline of sweat again, is vomiting up a necessary part of expunging use again, is pressing down on your belly again, or seeing a redness arise on skin again, or producing tears for the first time again to bloom like a blood prick in the corner of the eye, and following the flesh trench down to the ears again to see snow again, or to never see snow again, as the case may be, is to cross the border to home again for the first time, seeing maple syrup shops with roofs caving in again, is to produce something for the first and last time in this world, not involving an exchange of currency or worldly goods again, to produce mucus again, to produce waste for the first time in the form of fecal matter that contains history again, and I hold on tight to your tiny hands. Sorry, there's like a lot more pages in this book than I remember. Could have put some fucking sticky notes in this guy. Here we go. Deleuze and Guattari are floating dead in the river, and I prod them gently with a stick. Fuckers. Am I pacifying transparent lung, or do my contours shift into more strident vengeance against the mouse exiting the fridge halo and crossing the porch and into the crack of sweltering crawl space and onto the lawn where it enters from the hole beneath the compost, the words enter and lose their bodies and gain their bodies and the striated garden on a moon itself. The cultural lawn made a measure of how we approach semantic messiness to pull from roots and kill what's unwieldy. And if we have a mess at all, it's in smallest controllable patches, an ivy, a briar, an authoritarian herbaceous layer, a golden retriever gleefully shitting while its haunches twitch and sipping twisted tea as the days run by. We gave the chickens human names. Dorothy, Sydney, little Lucia, or Lucy, or Daddy's little lair, or Bertha, Roberta, or my pregnant breakfast maker, purveyor of shit, and calcified fragments of made language like the remnant smear and protruding straw that clings to the egg, the language that clings to the inside. Right, I'm gonna do one more. In those fits of vulgar joy. Was it for this? The summer ended. The empty pool, the hapless lung, the first leaf strung limply on wool, the strings of dry flowers above the TV and crackling light from every side, the static happening, an attic of trauma, an acratic sparrow chokes on the grub and the fragments multiplying, glorious shards of a Chardonnay bottle, the ligament mouth, the lingering moth, the shivering hornet, the haptic feeling of what exists outside form, and it swallows me whole on the tongue of a whale, and I slobber wind and mix psilocybin mushrooms into homemade pesto, the accessible angel, the program remote, the nostalgic den, the room where you lived and ate and grew sofa blisters, and the crumbs of saltines and nuggets live beyond us. The summer ended, the burning mall, the normcore goblin, the loss of geography as a locus for selfhood, the loss of locusts, the hands behind glass, the feverish symptom, the joy like a mark of tendrils across your skin when you rise from the carpet, or hallelujah, a grasshopper organs, the plaid horizon. Thanks, y'all.